At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more. My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
With TikTok ads, we went from 250,000 downloads to over 1 million downloads in less than a year.
I'm Eve.
I'm Anam, and we're the co-founders of Alinea.
Alinea Invest is an investing app for Gen Z.
We run 50 new ads per week with 3 variations thanks to TikTok's Smart Plus campaigns. If you're not advertising on TikTok, you're missing out.
Drive more app downloads only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
Some people spend their whole lives chasing ghosts, others never have to, because sometimes the ghosts come to you. For as long as she can remember, the dead have followed her. Not in nightmares, not in stories, but in real waking life. Her haunting began when she was only 5 years old, on a cold, gray day outside Carp, Ontario. It was January 1970. Her mother was driving them toward Ottawa down a stretch of rural highway that sliced through the snow like a white scar. The radio hummed softly, her little hands pressed against the frost-coated window. They were going to visit her grandfather, her mother's father, in the hospital. He'd just been diagnosed with cancer, and her mother was quiet, maybe too quiet. The kind of quiet that sits heavy in the air, just before something breaks. And then, it did. A flash of light, the scream of tires, metal twisting against metal, that wet, hollow sound that only happens when two worlds collide, life and death. When she woke up, her mother was gone. Just gone. The adults tried to explain it in the language they thought a child might understand. That her mother had gone to heaven, that she was at peace now. But a 5-year-old doesn't understand forever. She only understands missing someone so deeply that she still listens for their footsteps in the hallway. Months passed. The snow melted, the air grew thick with summer. And one afternoon, inside their little house, near Carp, she heard something that made her heart stop. Her mother's voice. It came from outside, soft and warm, calling her name the way only her mother could. She ran to the door, threw it open, and there she was, sitting on the old swing set beneath the weeping willow, the same swing her mother used to push her on. The sunlight filtered through the branches, turning the air gold. Her mother looked alive. Real. The same smile, the same eyes. "Come here," she said. "I've missed you." So she did what any child would do. She went to her, sat beside her. They talked for a few minutes about nothing and everything, about her brother, about how proud she was of her. The swing creaked gently as they rocked back and forth, and for a moment the world felt whole again. Then the screen door slammed behind her. She turned her head for just a second, and when she looked back, her mother was gone. Just the empty swing, moving slowly in the wind. That was the first time the dead came to her, but it wouldn't be the last. Later that same year, her grandfather, the man they'd been driving to see that tragic day, passed passed away from lung cancer. She went to live with her grandmother in Almonte, Ontario, a small, quiet town where the Mississippi River winds its way through stone mills and old brick buildings. It was the kind of place that seemed to remember its dead. Her grandmother, newly widowed, rented a modest apartment. It had two bedrooms, one for her, one for the ghosts of memory. In her room stood two beds, a simple steel three-quarter frame, and another beside it. She always slept in the steel bed, the cool metal pressing against her fingers at night like something steady, something real. But one night, something else was there. She woke to a strange stillness, the kind that feels aware. The moonlight poured across the room, silver and pale, and at the foot of her bed, she saw him, her grandfather. Not solid, but not invisible, either. His form was made of light and shadow, as if someone had traced him in fog. His eyes were soft, sorrowful. On his finger, a ring shimmered with an impossible brightness, light that seemed to pulse, almost alive. She tried to scream, but nothing came out. It was like something had reached into her throat and stolen her voice. She pulled the blankets over her head, heart pounding, and when she finally dared to look again, he was gone. The next morning, trembling, she told her grandmother what she'd seen. Her grandmother just sat there for a long moment, then said quietly, "Your uncles were fighting over your grandfather's ring. One of them took it off him from the casket. The air between them went still, and she realized the light she'd seen wasn't just a glow. It was fury, a warning, maybe even heartbreak made visible. From that moment on, the veil between worlds never really closed. Years passed. The little girl grew up, but the hauntings followed. Not from her family anymore, but from places, houses, homes that didn't want to let go of their dead. The first was a rented farmhouse outside Perth, Ontario, and it looked perfect on paper, an old home with wide fields and the smell of cut hay drifting through the windows. She and her husband moved in, hoping for peace, but almost immediately, the house began to breathe on its own. The faucets in the kitchen would twist open, water gushing full force without a hand in sight. Once, during a New Year's Eve dinner party, it happened right in front of guests. The laughter died instantly. Everyone stared at the running tap, the sound echoing through the old wooden kitchen like a pulse. Then came the footsteps. Every night, around the same time, they'd start at the bottom of the back stairs, slow, heavy, deliberate, step, 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 up toward their bedroom. Each creak perfectly timed, as though someone knew exactly where to place their feet. But no one was ever there. One morning, frost coated the upstairs window. She glanced up and froze. A handprint, perfectly formed, pressed from the outside. Except there was no ledge, no way anyone could reach it from out there. They lasted less than a month before packing up. The night before they left, a neighbor stopped by to pull her car from a ditch. When he heard their stories, he nodded grimly. "That place," he said. The old couple who lived there, they both died inside. Within weeks of each other, she never went back. But the dead, they don't care about addresses. When she bought a farmhouse near Forester's Falls, she thought, surely this one will be different. She was wrong. The haunting started small, flickering lights, uneasy dreams. But it grew, and her children began to feel it too. Her daughter stopped sleeping altogether, waking up every night in tears, screaming that someone was standing in her doorway. The upstairs hallway was the worst. The light there would flick on and off by itself, sometimes in rapid bursts like silent lightning. Their Rottweiler, normally fearless, would leap from a dead sleep, hackles raised, staring down that hall with a low, guttural growl. One night she saw what he saw. A man why dressed in clothes from another century, the kind you see in old black-and-white photographs. He stood in the hall, pale and lost, his expression filled with confusion. And somehow she knew what he wanted. He was trying to find Forester's Falls, trying to go home. She whispered that he was already there. And then he was gone. Even before moving in, she'd sensed something off. The day they arrived to unlock the front door, the key turned, but the door wouldn't budge. Something was pushing back. It felt like a person on the other side shoving with all their weight. When they finally forced it open, cold air rushed out. The kind that smells like basements and secrets. They asked around, but the previous owners had moved far away. No explanations, just silence. Eventually, she left Forrester's Falls behind, but she couldn't leave the feeling that something was leaving with her. When she and her husband built their new home near Cobden, Ontario, she wanted it to be different. A clean start, fresh ground, new walls that didn't already know sorrow. They designed every detail themselves, the wraparound porch, the big picture windows that caught the morning light, the garden that stretched down toward the trees. It was the house she'd always dreamed of. But almost from the beginning, something felt off. It started with voices, not whispering, not moaning. Just the unmistakable sound of two people arguing somewhere beneath the floorboards. Always around 3 a.m., like clockwork. At first, she thought it was her imagination. Maybe the heating system or the wind moving through the ducts, but it wasn't random noise. There was cadence, emotion. The low rumble of a man's voice, sharp and clipped, and another that sounded higher, maybe a woman's. Cutting back with angry precision. She'd jolt awake, heart pounding, and shake her husband. "Can you hear them?" she'd whisper. But he'd just roll over, half asleep, mutter something about her dreaming again. She'd lie there in the dark, straining to make out the words. Never could. Just that same rise and fall again and again, like a broken record of a fight that never ends. After a while, she stopped trying to wake him. It felt pointless. But she couldn't ignore the dread, that sinking awareness that they weren't alone in the house they'd just built. The strangest thing was how physical it all felt, like whatever haunted her didn't just exist in memory or sound, it occupied space. One Sunday afternoon, they'd gone out to the property for a picnic while the place was still under construction. The foundation was poured, the frame barely up, but she'd already started the garden, potatoes, beans, squash. She was crouched down checking the leaves for bugs when something shoved her, hard, between the shoulders. She fell forward onto her hands and knees in the dirt. "Hey!" she laughed, thinking her husband was playing a prank, but when she turned around, no one was there. The field was empty, just wind, grass, and the sound of birds overhead. She stood up slowly, brushing off her jeans, her smile fading. Because the shove hadn't been playful, it had been forceful, personal. Like something that wanted her gone. Once the house was finished, they tried to settle in, but even the architecture seemed designed for haunting. All those wide windows, meant to let in light, had become mirrors after dark, reflecting the empty yard back at them. And she began to notice movement. A figure, walking past the glass. Always outside, never inside. She'd tell her husband. He'd sigh, grab a flashlight, and go out to check. Every time, nothing. No footprints, no sounds, no one on the property. After a while, he stopped going, stopped believing. But she couldn't ignore it, because she knew what she saw. The shape of a person gliding past the glass, disappearing just as the motion light flicked on. It happened too often to dismiss. Sometimes she'd see the reflection in the living room window while folding laundry. Other times in the kitchen, a flicker of movement along the porch. She'd turn, expecting to see someone walking up the steps, but the boards would be empty, the wind still. And every time she told herself, maybe it's just my reflection. But deep down, she knew better. The reflection always moved the wrong way. Then came the night the house itself seemed to explode. It was well past midnight when a thunderous bang jolted them both awake. Not outside, inside. Like someone had slammed a door with impossible force, and her husband sat up breathless. "Did you hear that?" "Yes," she whispered. "It sounded like someone's downstairs." He grabbed a flashlight and crept down the steps. The sound of each tread echoed like gunfire. She waited, holding her breath. No voices, no movement, just silence. When he came back up, he was pale. "There's nothing," he said. "Nothing's open. Nothing's broken." The next morning, snow had fallen overnight. She walked the length of the driveway checking for prints, any sign of a visitor. But the snow was pristine, untouched. Whatever had made that noise had come from inside. There's a special kind of fear that grows in quiet houses. It's not the loud kind that makes you scream. It's the slow, creeping kind that makes you question your own sanity. Every time she went into the basement, she felt it. That pressure. A heaviness that clung to her chest and made her heart race. The basement wasn't unfinished or gloomy. It was warm, lived in. Her children's bedrooms had once been down there. But now that they were grown, it belonged to something else. She'd descend the stairs with a laundry basket, and halfway down, the air would change. She'd freeze, every instinct screaming that someone or something was standing just out of view. And sometimes, as she turned the corner toward the laundry room, she'd see them. Shadows. Fast, darting shapes that slipped across the hallway just as her eyes adjusted to the dark. Every time she'd tell herself it was nothing. That her mind was playing tricks, but she could never shake that feeling of being watched. The panic would come hard and fast, her chest tightening until she felt dizzy. Still, she'd force herself to keep moving, tossing the clothes in the washer, avoiding the mirrors, refusing to look down the hallway on her way back up, because she knew if she did, she might see something staring back. What's strange about all of this, all the decades of hauntings, is the pattern. It never mattered where she went. The ghosts always found her. Carp Almonte, Perth, Forrester's Falls, Cobden. Different towns, different houses, different lives. Same shadow following. You start to wonder after a while, are the places haunted? Or are you? For her, that question has no clear answer. She's not a medium, not a psychic. She doesn't seek it out. But ever since that day in 1970, since the car accident that took her mother, she's been tethered to the other side. Maybe it began in that moment, when her heart kept beating and her mother's didn't. Maybe the line between life and death blurred just enough that something slipped through, something that recognized her as one of its own. There's an old superstition, one whispered in rural towns and old parishes across Ontario. The children who survive tragedy are marked. They call it the shadow's inheritance. The idea that when death brushes close enough to touch you, it leaves a trace. Not visible, not measurable. But the dead can see it, and maybe that's why when she was little, her mother could still find her. Maybe that's why her grandfather appeared that night, light blazing from the stolen ring. And maybe that's why every house she's called home since then has seemed to remember her before she even moved in. The last time she heard the voices in the basement, she didn't run. She stood at the top of the stairs listening, and for a fleeting moment, she thought she recognized the tone, not anger, but grief. A man's voice cracking under the weight of it. It hit her then. Maybe these weren't strangers. Maybe they were echoes of the lives she'd already touched, the ones she'd lost, the ones still trying to reach her. She doesn't tell many people her stories anymore. Her husband stopped listening years ago. Her kids grew up, moved out, built their own lives, ones that didn't include arguing ghosts or shadowy hallways. But the house is still alive at night. The porch still creaks with unseen footsteps. The windows still reflect figures that don't belong. And sometimes around 3 a.m., when the voices rise again from the basement, she'll sit up in bed and listen. Not out of fear, but recognition. Because she knows now what most people spend their lives trying to ignore. The dead don't stay buried. Not really. They follow the living. Sometimes out of love, sometimes out of longing, and sometimes simply because they can. And if you've ever brushed against that thin veil even once, it remembers you.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.